Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the Rogue Report Extra podcast. Today, because we have no match this week, we're going to be discussing Jack Ross's time at Sunderland and giving it a little bit of an overview. The Sky Sports' very own red and white flag bearer, Tom White. How are you doing? Are you well?
I'm very well, thank you. Always well.
Always well. You are. You're a very positive man.
I am. I wasn't feeling so positive after that Lincoln game. I don't think the rest of the fans were either. It wasn't a particularly nice atmosphere, was it? But we'll be all right.
Good day though, wasn't it? It was a good day out. I'll give it that.
Every away day is good. Unless it's at St. James's Park and we lose, and it's been a while.
It's been a long time.
An away day is always fun.
It's been a long time that, mate. So, obviously, before we go through Jack's time in charge, I suppose my first question would be, you know, what was your take on his dismissal? And obviously, recent performances were certainly not reflective of a team who were aiming for promotion, but did you find the timing a little bit odd?
I think the timing, actually, to me, made sense just because it was an international break. The thing that kind of confused me a little bit is that we don't know what's going on with this potential takeover. And I was kind of thought to myself, right, well, if a takeover happens, they probably will change the manager. If not, they'll probably keep Jack Ross. So the fact there's an international break and we're a quarter of the way through the season, that timing made sense. In terms of actually sacking Jack Ross, I'm quite boring with most managers. I always think it's the wrong decision to sack them. Most of the time, I think that they should be given longer. Even going back to Peter Reid, I don't think we should have sacked Peter Reid. I actually think we would have stayed up if we hadn't sacked him. A little bit different with Howard Wilkinson. I must admit, I actually thought when we sacked Mick McCarthy, he would have got us back up even though we were going down. Poyet, I thought we could have kept him for longer, given him the summer. I think he would have kept us up. Same with, I wasn't sure about Advocaat, that was his decision, I suppose. But even Martin O'Neill, I would have given till the end of the season. It's very rare that I think a manager should go so early. So in that sense, I would have kept him for a little bit longer, but I do completely understand the timing and that atmosphere on Saturday. I can see why the owners thought we have to make a change.
Going back to when, you know, Jack Ross first arrived at Sunderland, we had pretty much plummeted to depth I don't think many of us thought were possible. He'd inherited a threadbare squad with a $40 million wage bill, padded out with under-23s. The likes of Paddy McNair, Joel Dassault didn't really bother coming back. And those that did return had just endured two of the most memorable seasons in the club's history. Do you think it's easy to forget how big of a job Jack had to deal with, tasked with not only getting us promoted, but also changing the entire culture around the stadium and the academy?
Yeah, I think he did a good job of that, no doubt at all. And after, when we lost the playoff final, in my mind, there was no way at all that we should have got rid of him then. We were absolutely right to keep him. I know that we wanted to go back up straight away, but he did have one heck of a job. Now, other managers have inherited a similar mess, not just at Sunderland, but other clubs, and still managed to achieve everything that was set out by the owners for them. And not going up was a disappointment, but he definitely deserves a lot of credit for what he did. On the other side, every manager, and I speak to loads of managers, whether they're in work or out of work, they all say that they need 3 transfer windows to get the squad how they want it to be. Now, I'll defend Jack Ross again. Because of the mess he inherited, I actually think that he probably needed even more than three transfer windows, because the first one, there was, remember, there were players like Djilabodji and Ndong were still there when he came. Lamine Kone, although he actually turned up to training, at least. We know that there were players on far too much for League One, in fairness, far too much for the Championship, in Catamore and Oviedo, and they played their part, they played more than their part, they were very good. But he had to find a way of still keeping them in without annoying the rest of the squad, who were on maybe a 20th of what they were getting paid. So I actually think he should have been afforded, he could easily, there's definitely an argument to say he could have been afforded another transfer window, maybe neither, even another one on top of that, because that kind of three transfer windows rule is a little bit too few considering what he inherited.
Yeah, I actually would agree with that. I think it's the first one, it was basically, there were some signings that didn't work out or haven't worked out so far, you know, the likes of Jack Baldwin and maybe Tom Flanagan, you could say that, but he had no one there really. I think it was 12, 13 players when he started.
I quite like Baldwin, you know, I actually quite like Baldwin. He, and I really wanted us to sign him.
Yeah, so, same actually.
So when he came, I was really happy about that. I don't think he was anywhere near as bad as been made out. And Tom Flanagan, he does, Sunderland fans, I don't know what, some people see this as a positive, some people see this as a negative, but we really love players who work hard and give their all for the club. Tom Flanagan does do that. So I wouldn't even say he hasn't worked out. I think Flanagan has done a decent job for a player who came in for nothing and not that much was expected of him. I think he came in and the idea was for him to be a squad player.
Yeah.
The fact that he's ended up being a first teamer actually is credit to him for forcing his way into the team and keeping staying in the starting lineup for so long last season. So I don't think he's really failed. And Baldwin, I honestly think, was decent. I would have kept him.
He was given a bit of harsh treatment, wasn't he? I mean, he was in that game against Coventry, both him and Flanagan didn't exactly paint themselves in glory, but Flanagan got a chance to redeem himself a little from that, and there can be an argument whether he has or not, but Baldwin was never seen again, really.
Yeah, I don't really know what the reason was for that, but in the end, the decision to bring Ozturk back in ended up being a good one.
Yeah,
because
most
he
definitely.
Did really well at the end of last season. I think he was a bit unlucky to lose his place this season as well.
Absolutely. I personally, I've got to be honest and say, I don't think that's the case. I think it's no secret that I'm very pro this person that I'm going to mention, but a lot of people feel like the first mistake of Ross's tenure was appointing George Honeyman as captain. What were your thoughts on Honeyman as a captain, maybe when he started and throughout his time at Sunderland as captain?
Well, when Jack Ross came in, there was one obvious captain, and that was Lee Cattermole. He was already captain, really, even though he hadn't been officially club captain for a lot of years. Because O'Shea took it off him when he was getting all those red cards earlier on in his career under Steve Bruce. It eventually went to John O'Shea and then to Honeyman last summer. But I think Cattermole, had Jack Ross known that Cattermole was not leaving last summer, it would have just gone to Lee Cattermole.
Yeah.
For the reason of, you're a natural captain, you are a leader anyway, whether you've got the armband or not, and you're getting paid a fortune. So if we make you captain, there's a bit more responsibility because we're paying you so much, you should have more responsibility. And the fact that nobody knew whether Cattermole was still going to be there or not because of his wages, Jack Ross was left with the option of a lot of new players. I don't think he would have wanted it to be given to a player who was new to the club. He needed someone who knew the club inside out and also had a fair few amount of games under his belt. And George Honeyman, being from the Northeast, having been at the club since, well, I don't know if it was early teens or maybe even earlier than that.
Since he was 10.
And he played a little bit in, since he was 10, well, yeah. Exactly. Then he played a little bit in the Premier League. I think he played more minutes than everyone else in the Championship.
He did, yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah, I think that with uncertainty over Cattermole last summer, I think Honeyman was the right person to give it to. If I'd been Jack Ross, I would have given it to him as well. And he was a good ambassador for the club. He came across well in interviews. There were times when I think that maybe he could have done with a little spell out of the side. And because he was captain, your captain tends to be picked, which is understandable. That's maybe the only criticism of it. But I had no problem with him being captain whatsoever. But I do think it would have been Cattermole if Jack Ross had known that he was staying.
Do you ever think, and I suppose this is my own thoughts, but I always felt like the only issue I really had with George Honeyman was I didn't know really what his position was, but that wasn't his fault. I think, and it was really evident in the playoff final that when Max Power got injured, Honeyman went, he started in the number 10 and then he brought on Lewis Morgan. So you want him to drop deeper, but it seemed that George didn't really know if he should be a deep midfielder, a number 10 or a box to box. And sometimes that would cause him to look invisible, even though he was doing a lot of hard work. I personally thought he was better, deeper. And I think that more of a mistake of Jack Ross wasn't so much giving him the captaincy. It was not nailing down a position and training him in that. A little bit like he's doing with Luke O'Neill, who's playing like three positions in one game. How does a player settle with that?
Yeah, well Honeyman also was playing on the wing under Simon Grayson.
Yeah.
And that playoff finally he was on that right hand side a lot until the injury came. And then obviously Morgan went there. But if you look at the formation that Jack Ross was playing last season, you could most of the time see it as a 4-2-3-1, right? Now, in that number 10 role, you had either Honeyman or, in our best spell of the season, you had Chris Maguire playing just off, well, it was Madger at the time. Now, I would argue that neither of those are a 4-2-3-1 because when you put Maguire in that role, so on the team sheet, it might be spelled out as Maguire behind Madger. I actually think that Maguire played up front with Madger, and actually it was a 4-4-2. The winger's jobs didn't change. The winger still had to get up and down regardless. There was two midfielders who sat, and I think Maguire was actually up front with Madger, so it was more like a 4-4-2. If Maguire was either on the bench, injured, suspended, or on the wing, and Honeyman played at number 10, I don't think that was a 4-2-3-1 either. I think it was a 4-3-3 in the old Allardyce and Poyet kind of way. Because Honeyman, again, on the team sheet, he might be behind whoever the striker is, but realistically, he sits deeper. So if he's there with Cattermole and Power or Cattermole and McGeoch, whoever it is, Honeyman drops in and it's a three in midfield as opposed to a number 10. I think all of last season, even though it was spelt out as a 4-2-3-1, I actually don't think we ever played it. Because there was no natural number 10. Most people aren't a natural number 10.
Yeah.
But I think Maguire played the striker and Honeyman played deeper. And that, when you're trying to stay in the Premier League under Allardyce and Poyet, that 4-3-3, or even 4-5-1 you could call it, with three central midfielders, with definite central midfielders, not particularly attacking, trying to survive in the Premier League, that's perfect. That works. Trying to get promoted from League One, you either need a second striker or someone to play off the striker. And that's why it worked when Maguire played there, up front, basically up front. When Honeyman sat, it was too defensive for us to make a 1-0 into a 2-0. Because our 1-0s, as you know, ended up in 1-1 too often.
Ultimately,
that cost us. So I think that was the problem. His natural game wasn't to push forward, it was to come back.
Talking about strikers and, you know, who played where, I think one of the big issues Jack came up against was in the striker search. I think originally we were linked with the bloke from Hibs, Florian Kamberi, who's gone on to
Kamberi,
well.
Yeah.
We were very, very close to signing Lyle Taylor, though, and Taylor later claimed that he would have signed for Jack Ross, and I say this in inverted commas, but the powers that would be were ridiculously stubborn. In the end, Taylor signed for Charlton for less wages, went on to score 25 goals and provided 12 assists. We will never really know the true story. It'll be he said, she said a lot of the time. But do you feel that Jack Ross was hamstrung by the recruitment team, maybe wheeling and dealing a little bit too much?
Well, I don't know whether they were wheeling and dealing, but really, if they are being a little bit, if the recruitment team and the owners are being a little bit kind of tight, a bit stingy with the wages, good, because we've had it for so long where we've overspent. We've said, you don't really want to come to Sunderland, do you? Oh, well, I'll tell you what, we'll give you more. And players have signed and their hearts haven't been in it. So actually, I see it as a positive if we are trying to keep the wage bill down and kind of counting every penny, because we should be, because we are in League One. And actually, even if we go higher, that it should still be the policy. So I don't mind that. But definitely Lyle Taylor would have made a big difference, because he is, I think he's a really, really good player. Florin Cambéry, I wasn't too fussed about him, if I'm honest. But the one thing that I've noticed ever since Jack Ross has come in, and it's something that I said, I did an interview with SAFC TV at the end of the season, and I said, I know that you've said for a long time that we need pace and power.
Yeah.
To me, the power is a bonus. The pace is a necessity.
Absolutely.
It used to be that at the championship level, for a striker or winger, pace was almost enough. Now, the championship has really improved in quality and tactically, so that's maybe not the case anymore. In League One and League Two, pace is almost enough. If you are lightning fast, you are going to get chances, right? And if you get enough chances, you're going to put enough of them away. And I felt that last season, we lacked pace. And this season, we didn't actually add that much pace. Mark McNulty is nippy. I wouldn't say he's lightning. At the end of last season, we had Lewis Morgan, who was fast, but he went. A lot of people tell me that Keziah Sterling is fast. I don't know, because he barely played. But if he was fast, we didn't replace him with anyone with any real pace. And I still think that's been the problem. But even if you look at those strikers, Lyle Taylor isn't lightning fast. Florin Cambéry certainly isn't fast. It looked like if they were the players Jack Ross was targeting, that wasn't a necessity in his mind to bring in fast players. And that's where I think we have really, really lacked ever since last season. If you look at the side, in terms of pace, McGeady's very quick off the mark, but he's not going to run away from his fullback. All right, no. He gets past his fullback with tricks. That's fine. Lyndon Gooch is pretty quick. Like I say, McNulty is pretty quick. But when was the last time we've had a player who was absolutely lightning? I mean, maybe Patrick Van Aanholt.
Yeah.
He was very, very quick. And I'm sure I'm missing a few out. But since Jack Ross came in, that's what I think that we've lacked.
I suppose when you look at the time Jack Ross had at Sunderland as well, and I know he's got his critics, but I honestly think if he was just fit more often, and if it wasn't for all the bad luck he's had, I think Duncan Watmore being fit on a regular basis could have just given us a different weapon, basically, to use. And I think...
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree
so
with
speedy.
That. He actually is someone. He was lightning.
He's just never fit.
And actually, every time he comes back from injury, I think, oh, well, he'll have lost his pace. Actually,
he hasn't
lost his pace. It's just that he's obviously got... He's just very, very unlucky.
Incredibly. And I think the way he plays as well, it's almost the speed and the way that he runs direct, he's almost asking players to kind of tackle him, in a sense. That's the way he plays. And naturally, if his bodies keep breaking down because he's keep on picking up niggles, he's probably more susceptible to a hard tackle from a midfielder for, say, someone like Wickham. And that's going to put him out for the end of the season. But I think if Watmore was fit, I'm not saying he's the oracle, but I think that certainly would have helped Jack Ross's case for needing a bit of extra pace in the team. But then on the flip side, knowing that he was so often unfit, and knowing that there wasn't much pace outside of that, whoever's in charge of that recruitment, if it is Jack's final answer, and he gets the decision on that, or it is the recruitment and they decide for him, you have to ask that question if, you know, who's to blame for not bringing that in, because it certainly would have helped his position as manager, I think.
I'd be very surprised if Jack Ross didn't have the final say. And I'd be surprised if Jack Ross wasn't able to say to the recruitment team, I like that player. Can we go after him? Can you find out how much he'll cost? Can you find out if we can afford him? I think that he would have had the final say, certainly. But when I was talking about that formation there, playing with Honeyman a bit deeper and playing a 4-3-3, if you think about that under Allardyce, now that I've had a chance to think about the pace, we were so good once Allardyce had that settled formation and team. And if you think about it, right, Yedlin and Van Aanholt were two of the quickest players in the Premier League. They were attacking from full back. The two wingers were either Watmore and Barini or Kasri and Barini. Kasri was quite quick. Barini and Watmore, very quick. And Jermaine Defoe was certainly quick up front.
Yeah.
So if you're going to sit back and then counterattack, you need pace. And a lot of the time, that's what we were lacking under Ross last season. There's the kind of proof that Allardyce's team worked. But I do think that Jack Ross will have definitely been in charge of the transfers. I doubt that he will come out in the future and say, yeah, it was like Gus Poyet said, he wasn't signing the players. They, some of them weren't signing the players that he wanted. I think Di Canio even said the same thing. But I think Jack Ross probably was. I'd be very surprised if he said anything different.
With Jack Ross in general, I think there's a few people have looked at kind of not so much the downfall, but the moment when it went a bit south for him. But do you think Jack Ross ever recovered from, first and foremost, the loss of Josh Maguire and the two near misses at Wembley?
I think Maguire, his goals, if he'd continued at that scoring rate, yes, I think we probably would have gone up. But at the same time, I thought we'd upgraded with Will Grigg. So I can't criticise that, because I agreed that we'd be better with Grigg than Maguire, even though I did think that we paid a little bit too much for Grigg, and through no fault of our own, just purely because of the contract issue, we didn't get very much of Maguire. But that was definitely a turning point, not having Maguire's goals anymore and Grigg not hitting the ground running like we had hoped. The Wembley defeat in the Checker Trade Trophy, I don't think that will have affected them that much. I think they would have loved to have won the trophy there. They went to Wembley. When we went to Wembley against Manchester City in 2014 in the League Cup final, it was win, lose or draw. We are so happy to be here. We shouldn't beat Manchester City anyway. We're going to have a great day. Checker Trade, it was right. We're going to have a great weekend, but we expect to win this. So there will have been a little bit of deflation. But wasn't it straight after that game that we went to, wasn't our next game the away at Accrington?
Accrington, yeah, on the Wednesday or Tuesday night.
Because I went to that game and we were brilliant, right? There may have been a game in between now that I think about it, but I don't know. That game against Accrington, we were excellent. It was probably the most comfortable, apart from that game at home to Scunthorpe at the start of the season, it was probably the most comfortable that we'd been. We won 3-0. It was excellent. The away section was in brilliant spirits. One of the best away days I've ever been to, away at Accrington. And that was just after we'd lost that final. So I don't think that affected us that much. But losing the playoff final was very, very deflating. I know that a lot of the fans were upset about it. Me personally, I felt that although I wanted to go up, I loved last season. So as a fan, I really enjoyed winning more games than we lost for the first time in, well,
forever.
Probably since we last got promoted, unless Steve Bruce did it in that season we finished 10th. It's been so long, and I'd enjoyed that season so much. I was quite calm, thinking, well, it's okay, we'll go back up next season. But I know that was a disappointment. And I think his downfall of losing that game meant it put so much pressure on him at the start of this season. And that's why he's gone, you know, a quarter of the way through it. And he tried his best. What he tried to do, he thought, right, I'm going to change the formation. And let's see if that works. It didn't work, and he binned it. He binned it very, very early. But actually, our results improved when he binned it originally. And then we reverted to type and started drawing and get a couple of defeats in, and he was gone. But I think that has all come from the pressure of losing that playoff final.
Talking about pressure and things like that, and I guess it's just a question I want to ask, and you know, my opinions, I'll keep to myself on it, but do you think that the 100-point target set by the owner was a bit of a nail in the coffin for him? Because if you look through the squad, you know, without one or two exceptions, we have got a squad who are by and large good League One players. Not brilliant, good. So was it ever like a realistic target, especially when you consider, and we've already touched on the necessary improvements that were required, that weren't made? Do you think it was always an unrealistic target?
I remember wincing a bit when I heard it. It was on your podcast.
It was me that asked the question.
I remember it, and I remember wincing again. Oh, that's a big total for a team who actually to be honest, unfortunately, only finished fifth last season.
Yeah.
Saying you want to go to 100 points when we know we're going to lose Catamon and Oviedo and possibly others, and there doesn't appear to be much money to spend, that is a little bit harsh. I think saying we demand automatic promotion this season, possibly even saying we demand to be champions, I actually think most people would say, well, so we should. Yeah, fair enough. And Jack Ross would probably say, do you honestly think I'm going to aim for anything less than that? But 100 points was kind of not just like the icing on the cake. It's not just even a cherry on the top. I mean, it's like getting a whole new cake, getting to 100 points. It was a little bit too much to ask, I think, to put that pressure on. But I do think that they were well within their rights to suggest that we should be going up even as champions, but certainly an automatic promotion. And that obviously could still happen. It just will be under a new manager.
Yeah. Now, when I last interviewed Stuart on the podcast, I asked him, because I think even though I'm doing this podcast surrounding Jack Ross's time, I think I was quite evidently felt that he wasn't the man for the job shortly into the beginning of the season. But I asked him on that podcast, and I told him quite honestly that I wasn't a fan of Jack Ross. And I said, you know, why is Jack the right man for Sunderland? And you'll have to bear with me as I read his response, but you'll see where I'm going with it once I've read it out. But his response to the question of why is Jack Ross the right man, or why should I believe he's the right man, he said, for a number of reasons, he has been successful before. When you analyse his stats, he wins more of his games in his second year of management than in his first. When you watch him and listen to the people at the club who talk about the sessions that he puts on, the training, etc., it sounds like from the people who are at the football club who know the football from seasons before, it's night and day from what it was previously. He's very engaging. I believe that the lads are with him, and I think that they will get better and grow. He's hardworking, diligent. He looks at himself. He's always evaluating and trying to improve, and I believe that he's not a stubborn manager that won't take views on board. He's improved players. If you ask Aidan McGeady why he wanted to stay, it was Jack Ross. Now, Aidan loves Sunderland, but he's very pro-Jack. I'm not saying that Aidan McGeady is the fountain of knowledge on all of football managers, but when you have a player of his calibre who knows Jack can get the best out of him, that's a feather in his cap. You can focus on things that have gone wrong and all of the negatives, or you can turn around and say, I'm aware of how difficult it is to manage players when some are earning £150,000 a week and others are earning £40,000 a week, and get a unified dressing room where everyone feels together. Jack managed to get a togetherness within that squad, and everyone is entitled to think that he's not the right man for the job, but I've made a judgment call that he is the right man for the long-term benefit of this football club. So that was his full quote. So since I asked the question, we've played 11 games, we've won 7 of them, including superb wins over Premier League sides Burnley and Sheffield United. We've drawn 2 of them, and we've also lost 2. What do you think has changed in Stewart's mindset to go from describing Jack as the man for the long term to relieving him of his duties in 52 days?
Everything he said there, I think was fair. I think he's kind of, for anyone who wanted Jack Ross to go at the end of the season, I think he's explained it perfectly why he didn't go at the end of the season. But I think that he will have always had in his mind, let's give him, but normally in the Premier League, you say, judge me after 10 games. That's what people tend to say, managers in the Premier League, and the owners will give them 10 games at the start of the season. If things haven't gone so well the season before, I think that all that's happened is he isn't as high up the table as they would expect at this time. And they feel that they've given him enough time. But like I said at the start, I would have given him longer. I think that all that's happened is he hasn't done as well as they think so far. And they feel a change is necessary. What I am surprised about, the fact that they've let him go and the takeover as yet hasn't happened. Take over with inverted commas, because we don't really know what it is. I thought that if they were going to get rid of him this early, I thought they might have had somebody lined up, someone they might have spoken to, and he would agree to take the job. They think, while this person is available, we need to get him now, because this person guarantees us promotion. like what happened when Steve Bruce left, Martin O'Neill was interested in the job. And Martin O'Neill was highly sought after at the time. So Steve Bruce might have got more time if it wasn't for Martin O'Neill being available. And I thought maybe when Jack Ross went, we had something similar lined up. That clearly isn't the case because they're doing a proper interview process this time. So it's a very, very fair question when you listen to those quotes from him. I just think that he expected more from him at this stage.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yesterday, Jack did release the following statement from the League Managers Association. He said, "It's been an honour to have the responsibility and the privilege of managing Sunderland AFC for the past 18 months, and it is with regret that I leave my position there. I leave with my head held high in respect to the depth and the commitment and hard work my staff and I applied to the job. I offer my sincerest gratitude to all of my staff, those who I brought with me to the club, those who were already in place. Every single one of them has provided me with huge support and are not only good at their jobs, but more importantly, are fantastic people. I would like to extend my thanks to all of the players I worked with and who bought into my ideas and workings, and I will miss the relationships I built with them. To the supporters of the club, I offer my thanks for their welcoming 18 months and for their support since. I hope that the future brings a deserved reward for the passionate and loyal backing. And finally, I reflect upon two Wembley finals, one league defeat at the Stadium of Light, victories over Premier League opposition, and an overall progressive record and take satisfaction from them. Furthermore, I believe that we rebuilt the spirit at the Academy of Light and under the most challenging circumstances at times. Thank you to Sunderland AFC and good luck." What's your take on his statement? Because he actually expresses his thanks to everyone at the club, but seems to stop short at thanking Stuart and Charlie. Are we reading too much into that?
Oh, definitely, because he says everyone at the club. So they are in, you know, they are part of the club. So I think he is thanking them. I think it's a very good statement. He doesn't have any little digs in there, because sometimes when a manager goes, there are a few digs. Maybe the bit at the end when he's saying, you know, "I remember the two Wembley finals and the getting the squad together and the progressive record." But all of that is true. All of that is fair.
Oh, very much. Yeah.
It's probably the best statement that I've. They always release them through the LMA, the League Managers Association.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably the best statement from an outgoing Sunderland manager. Well, that I can remember. But it's obvious that he is. It's been very obvious that he is a good guy, and certainly works his socks off. Did everything he could to get us promoted and to do a good job at the club. I think he appreciated the fact that he is at a big club. It just hasn't worked. I think it's been his tenure has been good, but it needed to be, it just hasn't been perfect. And I think that statement is a good one. And like I say, I still think he's done very well, just hasn't done quite enough to keep his job and become a Sunderland legend. Because anyone who does well at Sunderland will become a Sunderland legend.
Yeah. I think he's done well. He was good. He just wasn't as good as we needed him to be. But you can't deny that we're certainly in a much better place with him leaving than where we were when he came. And whether that was
definitely
as good as some people wanted. And again, I will be honest, now I didn't want him to be the manager of the club from about middle of August onwards, but I think he's a really classy bloke. I think he's got, I think he'll go on and do very, very well. I think this experience that he's had at Sunderland will stand him in great stead. And some people have said he's going to go back to Scotland and that's what he'll do. I would not be surprised if in a couple of years' time, the experience he's had here, plus the obvious potential he has as a manager, sees him somewhere in the Championship. I really wouldn't.
Yeah, I thought I'd go as far as to say that I expect that.
Yeah, actually, same.
And you do learn a lot from your mistakes. Or, well, any good manager learns a lot from their mistakes as a manager. And he will look back and say, "I shouldn't have done this. I wish I'd done that," just like anybody would. And I think he'll be better for it. I don't think he'll get the club as big as Sunderland, but he may well get a club in League One who are also challenging for promotion. And who knows, he might get a club promoted while we don't go up. You see, that could still happen. And he'll end up higher up than Sunderland. even though it's probably not going to be at such a big club. But I think you're absolutely right. I think he will have a very, very good managerial career. It's actually really sad that it's not going to be here.
Yeah, no, I absolutely 100% echo those sentiments massively. Talking about more positive things, you know, it sometimes feels like the time Jack Ross had was a little bit negative, and it really wasn't. You've got some really standout moments. You've got that last minute win at home at Charlton, one of the best of all time for me. The 4-2 win over Barnsley, 9,000 fans at Blackpool. The two Trafalgar Square takeovers were absolutely fantastic, and there's been some really positive moments that have come out of Jack Ross's time, despite its admittedly sad ending. But what was your personal favourite memory of his time in charge, or favourite game, if you prefer?
Well, I missed the Blackpool away. I was absolutely devastated to have missed it, because if I'd gone there, I would definitely have said that. A strange one I'm going to say, because I also wasn't there, was, can you remember Boxing Day, Bradford at home?
Yes.
And we got, was it 46,000?
46,000, yeah.
And fans who couldn't go were paying for, through the Academy, the Foundation of Light, for children to go in their place.
Hand on a gift that? or something like that, wasn't it? And it was a man, I think a local businessman, that said he wanted to do it. And I think Stuart Donald then retweeted it, and then Charlie got behind it. Yeah, that was fantastic, actually. That's a brilliant memory.
Yeah, because I did that. I couldn't go on Boxing Day either. And so I paid for two adults and two children to go. So it was kind of like to go as a family, maybe. And that was this is not even on the pitch. So this isn't even for Jack Ross. I suppose this may be even just the way the feeling was, the atmosphere around the club was such a positive atmosphere. And we hadn't had that. We had it in little spells when we'd make a great escape, and especially under Poirier, but also under Sam Allardyce as well. We had little spells where everything was great. But the club at the time, it felt like we were on track to get promoted. We were winning on the pitch, and then off the pitch you had fans helping other fans, and you don't get that at every club. So my favourite part of the season was actually that Bradford game at home. And then on the pitch that day, we did win 1-0, but it was pure comedy when they clearly scored. The ball was well over the line. John McLaughlin scooped it back, and I could see watching it on my phone that it was a goal.
So right, far over the line.
Tiny screen, it was so obvious it was over the line, and it wasn't given, meaning that actually it was pure comedy on the day, and we got 3 points. Amazing atmosphere, set a record attendance for League One. So that's actually the memory that stands out. I mean, that's not much good for Jack Ross, because he didn't really do much about it. But some of the away days that I went to last season, that Accrington one was brilliant. And you know, we won that one as well. Gillingham away, I tell you, that stands out as an away game as well, because Gillingham, before I went there, I know a Gillingham fan who said to me, you do know that we were officially given the worst away day in the Football League. And I went, oh, great. Went there on a Tuesday night. It was August.
It was
scorching hot, right? So we were in that temporary stand that's been there for years and years, even though it's temporary stand with no roof. But it was absolutely beautiful, and we stuffed them 4-1. So in terms of on the pitch, I'm going to say that one, because that's when I thought, right, this is it. Everything's coming together for us now. But for the season on a whole, it was definitely just the whole atmosphere around the club on Boxing Day last year.
So I suppose just to finish on, as we're currently speaking, I think we have been given permission to speak to 5 managers. Now, off the top of my head, I think if we're talking about given permission, we're talking about managers in work. So you've got Gareth Ainsworth. I think Paul Cook is potentially speaking to us. And then I can't think of who else off the top of my head. Kevin Phillips.
Coventry gave Mark Robbins a new contract.
So maybe that's one of them. Kevin Phillips is, you know, I know he's interested. He spoke as much. You've got Stendell as well. But I suppose it's a double-ended question just to finish on. I mean, first and foremost, who would you go for? Second of all, who do you think we'll get? Third of all, do you think that the chairman's looking for a manager to get us back into the Championship and beyond? Or do you think they're purely looking for someone to get us out of this league?
if he wants to, it wants someone to get us out of this league and then get significant investment to get us up to the Premier League, there may be a change of manager, even if we get promoted. But I think it's always best to plan long term anyway.
Yeah.
And I think any appointment that comes in, I think they would still get the chance in the Championship if they do get us promoted. But all of the names being linked, right, whether they're in work or out of work, there's kind of a list of safe options and a list of exciting options. All right, exciting options, Roy Keane, but that's a risk.
Yeah.
Kevin Phillips, exciting, but that's a risk.
Risk.
Safe options, Paul Cook, but he would cost compensation. Gareth Ainsworth would be quite safe as well, but not that exciting. You've kind of got one or the other, all right? I would say it depends whether we want excitement or just to be safe. But I've actually got three names that don't seem to be even linked with the job. If you want me to run through those three names and why I think.
Absolutely.
Right, okay. The first one, and this might surprise people, and people might immediately dismiss it, but I'll explain why I think it could happen if we go for him, is John Terry. I think that I know he's employed at the moment, but not as a manager. He wants to be a manager. I'd be very surprised if he was given a chance at a Premier League club as a manager. He is likely to get the chance in the Championship as a manager, but would it be a club as big as Sunderland, even though we're in League One? Probably not. I think he's worth a phone call. Are you interested? If he says no, no problem. I don't think we should rule out giving him a call. And if he's interested, he will instantly. Not many managers guarantee much. Allardyce guarantees that you don't get relegated. All right. I think Tony Pulis pretty much guarantees you don't get relegated from the Premier League. All right. I think that John Terry does guarantee an upturn in results, because if he walked in that dressing room, every player is going to be like, crikey.
Yeah, the standards there, Terry, very much so.
Right?
Yeah.
Just like Roy Keane did when he came in the Championship.
Yeah.
I
get on board with that.
Hope
get that.
That we've at least tried. And like I say, if he says not interested, fair enough. He is in the Premier League, even though it's not as a manager. He's in the Premier League at Villa, and things are quite exciting there. So fair enough, right? But I think we should try. A second one who hasn't been mentioned is Craig Shakespeare. He's out of work. He is an excellent coach. And also, he has the ear of Sam Allardyce if he wants advice. He's out of work. Why not speak to him? Why not interview him? See how he comes across. And his, in terms of being a manager, his experience is limited. In terms of being a coach and assistant manager, loads of experience. He's been briefly at England with Sam Allardyce. He's been at a big club like Everton. He has managed Leicester.
Yeah.
And was very unfortunate to lose his job.
Yeah, he was actually.
And he is out of work, and he's been out of work for a long time now. Would he consider it, especially if there's a long-term vision for him? All right. And I tell you what, it would help us if we've got Sam Allardyce helping him out as well, by the
way.
Oh,
yes.
Even just off the record. So there's John Terry and Craig Shakespeare. I know a few people might be listening to this thinking, all right, they're fair shouts. My third shout, I don't think I'll get a lot of love for it, but it's someone who was my first choice when Simon Grayson got the job. Right, so if I wanted him, when our aim was to get promoted back to the Premier League from the Championship, how can I rule him out when here we are trying to get back to the Championship from League One? And that's Paul Heckingbottom. I said when Grayson got it that he should get it. I wanted him to get it before Chris Coleman got it, even though I was happy with Chris Coleman getting it at the time. Heckingbottom's in a job at the moment at Hibs. Things aren't going that well for him at the moment, which doesn't help his cause, I know. But it does help our cause in terms of he might be interested, because he might be fearing losing his job at Hibs in the first place. I think they have won the last one or two, which has helped things out for him. But I love him. And my reason is, before people get annoyed with me, I meet a lot of managers in work and out of work, and some of them I sit and chat to off air. Yeah. I think, how on earth were you ever a manager? Right? Like, you don't even know half the players. Like you don't know what you're doing. Paul Heckingbottom, chatting to him, I just sat and listened. He was brilliant. Really, really impressive. Right? He does know the club, albeit only he was at the club as a kid. I'm not sure if he made a first team appearance, but he was a decent left back. It didn't help him that he had Mickey Gray ahead of him at left back. But really, really impressed with him. Really hard working, completely focused on football. Excellent record in the transfer market when he was at Barnsley, by the way. And he probably regrets leaving Barnsley for Leeds, because Leeds fans just weren't having him. And eventually he was binned for Marcelo Bielsa. That part's fair enough. But I really, really like him. And although it wouldn't be an exciting appointment for the fans, I can assure you that this guy knows what he's doing. He's not my friend or anything. I'm not trying to help a friend out. I've not spoken to him since he got the Hibs job. I've only ever spoken to him through work. But he was really impressive. And I would like him to be considered as well. But I've kind of given, of all the names everyone's talking about, it's too easy to keep talking about those and give my opinion on those. But those three from left field, I would really hope they were at least talking to them.
Tom, it's been really, really nice catching up and kind of covering over Jack Ross's time, both the positives, the negatives, and then talking about the future moving forward as well. But I'm sure we'll be seeing you around away days and hopefully back at the Stadium Alight. But thanks for joining us, Tom. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. I absolutely love the away days. The home games that go with my dad, they're great and everything, but we're purely there for the football. The away days is just a great day out.
Full day, isn't it?
Time.
And I owe you 2 pints.
Yeah. I'll let you off.
I'll
let you off.
Well, you know where I'm at, mate, but thanks for joining us, all right?
Pleasure.
Thank you, as always, to our guest today, which is Tom White. Thanks to everyone listening, and thanks, of course, to Sunderland University, which is where we record the show from. Have a good rest of the week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.